listener production. Hi, I'm Sasha Barbagat. Welcome to The Briefing. What do Kylie Minogue, Arcade Fire, G Flip and the presets all have in common? Well, they were all on the lineup for this year's Splendour in the Grass, till yesterday afternoon when the news came the festival had been cancelled. A specific reason on why still hasn't been revealed.
The organisers possibly didn't get the ticket sales they were looking for. Couple that with the broader industry, it probably became too much of a financial risk for the organisers to push ahead.
In the second half of this episode, Bension Siebert speaks with Swinburne's event management and public relations expert, Associate Professor Robert Gill, to find out what his take is and what the future could hold for Australia's music festival industry. First, though, let's get into the headlines with Katrina Blowers. It is Thursday, the 28th of March.
Hey everyone. Well, immigrant communities are reacting with shock and anger at the federal government's deportation bill that could see entire countries blacklisted from obtaining visas. Applicants from Russia, South Sudan, Zimbabwe, Iran and Iraq could be completely blocked from applying if this legislation goes through. Diasporas here say that could cut them off from their loved ones overseas indefinitely. This bill is in response to a High Court ruling, Sasha, that deemed the indefinite detention of immigration detainees unlawful. It's gotten quite a backlash so far.
Yes, well, it was a humiliating defeat for Labor, which failed to get its legislation rushed through the Senate yesterday. And this was because of a rare alliance which formed between the Greens and the Coalition, which saw the bill sent to a Senate inquiry instead.
Coalition senators basically begged the government to demonstrate why it was so urgent.
That was Shadow Home Affairs Minister James Patterson there. Now, that inquiry won't report until May 7. That gives a little bit of breathing room for some public debate to be had, which we missed out on because the Parliament was given just 36 hours of consideration of this bill before the vote. The laws have been deemed a Trump-style ban by the Greens, and the Coalition is angry it just didn't get enough time to debate the bill, Katrina.
Yeah, I've been doing some reading on this because I keep thinking to myself, surely this can't be as, you know, wild as it looks. But, you know, some clues can be found in the comments of the Secretary of Home Affairs Department, Stephanie Foster, who has given some public comments on this overnight. First of all, she was a little bit clumsy because she was asked about which countries are on the list and she said, I don't have the list. And then she later went back and reframed that as saying, I don't have a list. So perhaps there isn't a list, who knows? But what she did say is that the government sees it as a diplomatic tool that would give them leverage in working with countries to make sure that they have effective options to return people and not necessarily ever put it into place. And she pointed out that the UK government has had similar powers for 2 years, but they haven't used it. So it's kind of like threatening someone with taking away their cookie if they don't eat their vegetables, but the power to take away the cookie is still there.
Yes. And as I mentioned before, public debate, I think, is going to be really important with this bill because we've seen the backlash immediately from immigrant communities who are worried about what these laws could possibly mean. So I think it's necessary that these laws are given a bit more scrutiny, and that's exactly what they're going to get in this Senate inquiry. The black box from the cargo ship, which crashed into and brought down a major bridge in the US city of Baltimore, has now been recovered. An investigation into the incident is getting underway, with crew members on board at the time of the collision to be interviewed today. A recovery effort has resumed as well for six people who were working on the Francis Scott Key Bridge at the time. Sadly, though, they are presumed dead.
Yeah, representatives from the US National Transportation Safety Board say they will look into whether dirty fuel played a part in the tragedy, which saw the ship lose power before hitting a pylon. That would be a crazy outcome if that was the case. Joe Biden's already said that the federal government will foot the bill to rebuild the bridge. That could take years, though, and they won't wait for a ruling to be made about whether the shipping company is liable before they start going ahead with that project, which is needed. There's a lot of cars and commuters who use that thoroughfare.
Absolutely. And the US Transportation Secretary has also spoken to media and said any private company found to be responsible for the crash would be held accountable. So an investigation ahead yet, Katrina. But yeah, in the meantime, total devastation watching people who live in the city reacting to seeing that bridge brought into the water. I just couldn't help but think of, you know, I live in Sydney, you know, seeing something like the Harbour Bridge crashed into the water would just be so confronting. So a lot of healing to do there for Baltimore, I think.
Now, here's a crazy statistic for you. The equivalent of more than a billion meals, that's billion with a B, are being wasted every day while 800 million people go hungry. So this is according to the UN's Environment Programme Food Waste Index report, which has revealed the world threw away 1.05 metric tons of food in 2022, and that represents about a fifth of what's available. So this trend is being put down to wastage by households, restaurants, and other parts of the food service and retail industry. On top of that, 13% of the world's produce is lost as it travels from farm to plates. So we really need to get on top of better ways of transporting that food so there isn't so much wastage. About a third of the world's population faces food insecurity, and 783 million are affected by hunger. Pretty grim statistics, Sasha. And one thing that I found so interesting in this report is only 21 countries have included food loss and waste in their national climate plans. That's despite the fact it generates nearly 10% of emissions, and that is five times more than the aviation sector. So something to get on top of there.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it is something that Australian charities have kind of popped up in response to. Of course, we've got OzHarvest and Second Bite, who are some of the bigger charities that are nationwide that look to, you know, pick up food that's not being used by restaurants and either give it to other charities or food banks. But I did want to kind of put together a little bit of a list of things that, you know, we can do as regular people living at home, you know, to try and avoid food waste. It is something that I feel so guilty anytime I have to throw out any sort of food. But some tips that I found were to make a list when you go shopping. So only buy what you need, which is something I found really helps me in avoiding too much food waste. Make sure you pick ugly fruit and veg as well. They're just as good most of the time. They're just a little bit battered or bruised, but the flavor will be there. You can do things like freeze your leftovers and meat so that it doesn't go bad. Also, one that I really like that I want to do is get a worm farm or a compost bin, because that means, you know, any scraps you've got or any leftover fruit and veg can kind of, you can pop them in there and they're going to go into making good soil or as my mum likes to call hers, worm juice for her garden, which is a gross thought, but it's really cool seeing like the food go in, the worms churn it up, and then it comes out as this liquid that you pour over your garden. It's lovely. And of course, you can always donate to charities that do work with food and look to donate it to people in need.
And I'm going to add my own granny tip, which I read in a cookbook, which I actually use. You can add a little bit of stock to leftover salad and even just regular leftovers in the fridge. Add a little bit of stock, whiz it up, and it makes a soup. So sometimes you get sick of eating the same leftovers, but this transforms it into a completely new meal. So trust me on it. Give it a go.
Okay, great idea. And a big social breakthrough for Thailand, which is on the cusp of becoming the first country in Southeast Asia to legalise same-sex marriage. MPs in the nation's House of Representatives have voted overwhelmingly in favour of the move, which would allow legal unions between people of any gender. So 400 voted in favour, 10 were against, 2 abstained and 3 did not vote. Now, the bill is going to be sent to the Senate, and that rarely rejects any legislation that passes the lower house, so it's all but guaranteed. What happens next is it goes to the king for royal assent. Great news, Katrina.
What a breakthrough. And they did a big survey of people living in Thailand. And like, I think it was something in the realm of 96 point something percent, but it was overwhelmingly in support of same-sex marriage. And what this means for people practically is they can now adopt children, inherit property, give medical consent for their partners if they're incapacitated. So it is a big deal. Taiwan and Nepal are the only countries in Asia to have legalized same-sex marriage.
Such a great story, and we'll be keeping an eye on that one once it goes through the Senate. And look, before we get into today's deep dive, we did want to assure our listeners that the briefing is still going to be here over the long weekend. There will be morning and afternoon eps out on both Good Friday and Easter Monday, while Tom Tilley and Antoinette Latouf are in their usual seats for the weekend briefing.
Yeah, good if you're going on a road trip. Believe me, you need to queue up those podcasts. We're also going to be putting up Tom's full chat with Tom Ballard on YouTube if you want to check that one out.
Yes, excellent. I will be watching that one keenly. Thank you so much, Katrina. Now it's time for our look into the cancellation of Splendour in the Grass. Australia's answer to Coachella and Glastonbury has been cancelled. Splendour in the Grass won't be going ahead this year. We don't know why, but we do know the New South Wales government offered financial support to try to keep it going. This isn't the first time the event has been hit with difficulties. In 2022, the first day of Splendour was cancelled due to flooding, and last year saw the event far from selling out, with ticket sales down 30%. Splendour also isn't the only festival that's been cancelled lately. The regional touring festival Groove in the Moo was canned due to low ticket sales, as well as Falls Festival after a spat over a proposed new home. In this deep dive, Bension Siebert spoke with Swinburne's event management and public relations expert, Associate Professor Robert Gill, to find out what the future could hold for Australia's largest music festival.
Robert Gill, thanks so much for joining us on The Briefing.
Thank you.
Why has Splendour in the Grass been cancelled?
I could probably put it down to quite a eventful festival period for Splendour in the Grass this time last year, where it faced a number of challenges. Having said that, the festival industry is going through some pretty rapid change and a lot of challenges from all different areas that have contributed to the fall of a considerable amount of festivals anyway.
We'll get to the broader industry shortly, but what do you think are those potentially glaring and obvious reasons why it might have been cancelled?
Well, if people can recall last year, there was quite unseasonable rainy conditions for Splendour in the Grass, so bucket loads of rain, actually, if we want to be crass about it. And that caused a lot of trouble for the event organisers in terms of, do we run the event, don't we run the event? They opened up the event. People struggled to get in, so there was a delay in actually opening the gate, so to speak. So campers and event goers were stuck in long queues to actually get into the event. The rain made it very unpalatable. The conditions were terrible for driving in, camping, moving around the event area. So, you know, when you've got thousands and thousands of people trudging along in grassy areas, makes a considerable impact on the actual environment. And so it made it quite unpleasant. And in the end, the event was cancelled. I would presume, based on that and just the general environment for festivals at the moment, that the organisers possibly didn't get the ticket sales they were looking for. Couple that with the broader industry, it probably became too much of a financial risk for the organisers to push ahead.
Do you think it might have just been the wrong lineup?
Well, interesting you say that, because there is an environment amongst festival goers or even a broader entertainment consideration amongst the paying public that they're looking for value for money at the moment. And these festivals rely on funding up front. So the typical life cycle for the economics of a festival is that a lot of money goes out at the beginning. And then when ticket sales open up, the money starts to come back in. And when the ticket sales open up, if they're not kind of meeting particular expectations, then it can become a real challenge to keep balancing the books for the festival and have enough money in the kitty to to keep everybody happy and make sure that all the money that needs to go out to maybe performers or suppliers, catering, even venues, that you've got enough there to pay for that, down payments for each of those, on the promise that, you know, in 2-3 months' time, when ticket sales have really generated a lot of revenue, you can close down the balance on those. So if that money hasn't come in, it's very hard for those that are promoting or organising such events as these festivals to keep the festival open.
Is it unusual that only about 2 weeks, I think, after the lineup was announced that they would be scrapping it?
I'm not sure whether that's unusual, but another consideration, particularly for festival goers and people that have a strong interest in live music, is that there have been a number of big international acts that have particularly toured Australia in the last 18 months. Those acts cost a lot of money if you want to attend. Mm. They obviously also cost a lot of money for the promoters, but there's a decrease in the risk because people will go to these events knowing exactly the kind of music, the music style, the genre of the music they're going to get, and these entertainers are well known, and so the people that attend pretty typically really enjoy that kind of music and enjoy the event. And the event has a very small life cycle, so maybe 3-4 hours from the time somebody enters the venue to when they leave it. And so that decreases the risk, and that means that it often will allow that event promoters have a better idea about how much they're going to generate in terms of revenue from that particular event. When it comes to a festival, of course, typically a festival will be 2, 3, 4 days. And to fill out the card, the entertainment card, requires often that some unknown performers are part of that particular ticket. Some of those performers, you know, may not be known, as I said, to the event goers. And people now seem to be a little bit more picky and a little bit more risk averse in terms of, will I pay this amount of money to go and see maybe 5-6 performers I don't really know that much about, along with 5 or 6 that I really enjoy?
I imagine that part of the problem is that you're also expecting to pay, you know, $15 for a basic drink. You're going to be there for some 8 hours at a time, and you've already paid quite a huge amount of money just to get in the gate. Over the past few months, we've seen Groove in the Moo, Falls Festival, Vintage Vibes, Valley Ways, Coastal Jam, and Dark Mofo either cancelled or postponed. What does the future look like in terms of music festivals? Can I get you to bring out your crystal ball for a moment?
Well, I can look back on history and tell you that, you know, that the festival cycle is a cycle. There are decades of festivals that we can look back on, and there have been periods, you know, 10-year periods where lots of new festivals have come along and have been well supported and well populated with event goers. And then things happen in the world, particularly in the entertainment industry. The focus of the type of entertainment can change, and therefore the event cycle goes into a lull. I believe we're heading down that track. Things like insurance has become a lot more expensive, mainly due to the risk of weather. We can probably put that down to climate change. And as you talked about, you know, the actual festival lineup. So it's expensive to travel at the moment, it's expensive to get insurance at the moment, and therefore it's expensive to bring over mid-range popular acts from America and from Europe. And so a lot of the current festivals in Australia are losing acts, or are filling their acts with, in terms of popularity, lower-level performers that are from Australia. So an event guy was looking at the lineup and they're saying, you know, I don't know 2, 3, 4, 5 of these bands. Am I going to take the risk? Am I going to risk paying all that money and then spending, you know, considerable amounts of money on food and drink while I'm at the festival to be entertained possibly by bands or performers that aren't really my cup of tea, not my genre?
Well, here's hoping that the festivals industry in Australia works out, I guess, how to get out of that lull. Robert Gill, thanks so much for speaking with us on The Briefing.
No problem. Thank you.
That was Bension Siebert speaking with Swinburne's event management and public relations expert, Associate Professor Robert Gill. A reminder as well, we will be here all long weekend with some fascinating deep dives from Tom Tilley and Antoinette Latouf, as well as episodes coming out on Good Friday and Easter Monday. I'm Sasha Barbagat. Have a great long weekend. Listener.